learn to cope with your horrible life through laughter. And I think that is like, it's a very Mexican thing. That's a very Latin American thing, but Mexicans are really good at it.
I'm Lily Percy, and this is Creating Our Own Lives. Cool for short, the podcast where I ask people to think through how they shape their lives. And hopefully by listening, we learn how to create our own. This season on Cool, we're talking about humor as a tool for survival. And cartoonist and writer Lalo Alcaraz embodies this idea in his very being. Growing up Mexican in San Diego, near the U.S.-Mexico border, Lalo's world was in Spanglish. When he first began to draw as a kid, he explored his dual identity, creating characters and places where someone like him was normal, where he could be seen. And he never stopped doing that, as a writer in the Fox sitcom Border Town, produced by Family Guy's Seth MacFarlane, or in La Cucaracha, the first nationally syndicated, politically-themed Latino daily comic strip. So, Lalo, this is the burning question that I have, literally burning. Who was the person that made you laugh the most growing up?
I don't know if it was one person, but Mad Magazine really screwed me up and made me laugh when I discovered that satire was a language, and it kind of screwed up my whole outlook on life.
How old were you?
I want to say I was around probably 12, maybe, when I first started reading Mad. I mean, I would listen to Dr. Demento. That's how I discovered kind of classic comedy bits and sketches, you know, that were recorded on various comedy albums. Probably how I discovered Monty Python.
As a 12-year-old kid, that's pretty advanced.
Yeah, I was like really into comedy for some reason. And I used to watch the 1970s Saturday Night Live. I would have little sketchbooks with the skits written in, like a little, you know, log. So I have like, oh no, Mr. Bill, you know, and all John Belushi stuff. And
were you writing it down so that you could like reenact it later, or you were just taking notes like, I need to learn how to do this? Or
I'm not sure. I think I just was in love with sketch comedy and jokes, and I just thought, I just got to record this because we don't have technology to record it.
Yeah, that's true. This is pre-VCR.
Yeah.
So. Well, I remember in an interview that I read with you, you talked a lot about how you learned how to cope and how to have, you know, humor as a tool from your Mexican parents. And I just wonder, you know, what was it that they used that really taught you that?
It was mostly my mom.
The mommies are always so funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I'd love to say that my mom was a funny, wisecracking lady, but really, she was just vicious and brutal.
That's usually the shared link among all of our Hispanic parents. They weren't intentionally funny.
Yeah, no. I mean, she was a very smart person. She went to the fourth grade in Mexico, which at the time is probably like the minimum requirement of schooling back in the 40s. But she just had a wicked and very inappropriate sense of humor, and she passed that on directly to me.
Did she see that the two of you shared that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe she had a realization later once she saw me. She watched me do this bit where I responded to a libel lawsuit that Emilio Estefan was filing, threatening the LA Weekly with, because I had photoshopped him as Fidel Castro. And for some reason, he didn't enjoy that. And I dressed up as Fidel Castro to explain satire on Primer Impacto, because they were the first people to call and say, can we come over?
Not surprised there.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. They were on it.
They're kind of like the ambulance chasers.
They're, you know, TMZ in Spanish.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they came over. I said, but I'm going to be dressed like this. I got fatigues and a cigar. And they said, yes, please, you know. The only thing better would have been a bikini.
I was going to say.
And Primer Impacto comes on like 5 times a day, right?
Oh, yeah.
So my mom finally saw it. She finally kind of understood what I did for a living, which was like mock powerful people.
Wow. So something I'm so curious about is your work. A lot of it is in Spanglish, right? It has the dual language. It features characters with dual identities, just like you. I mean, you talked about growing up on the U.S.-Mexico border between those two worlds. And something that you wrote about, that I've read you talk about as well, is feeling like you weren't Mexican enough for the Mexicans and then not American enough for Americans. And it's something that I've heard a lot of my Mexican, particularly my Mexican friends, really talk about, you know, because their great-grandparents or their grandparents, even their parents, made the decision not to teach their kids Spanish so that they could better assimilate. And it's such a complicated issue, such a complex thing. And I just wondered, what role did humor play in helping you figure that out?
It definitely is the number one complaint of Mexican-Americans and Chicanos. I mean, I went into like possibly the worst career in Hollywood to try to write this thing, you know, where mm-hmm. really in Hollywood, I mean, they don't know we exist. They're barely starting to figure out that there are Mexican-Americans. And so I use humor as a way to cope with that and to let our community know that we're not invisible, at least not to us.
Yeah.
And I do push Spanglish. I do push biculturalism, you know, to make it normal.
Yeah.
That's what I didn't see growing up on TV. Even like I grew up on the border in San Diego as a kid, never saw brown people on TV unless I watched the stuff in Spanish. Mm-hmm. But so I eventually realized, wow, we are just not anywhere.
Yeah.
Here. What's going on?
Hmm. And that really motivated you to do that.
I wanted to make more media, you know, featuring us, more imagery. Whatever I can get my hands on.
Hmm. When did you first start drawing and coming up with cartoons and becoming that future illustrator?
Drawing, being artistic, kind of runs on one side of my family, on my mom's side of my family from mm-hmm. Sinaloa. And so when I was a kid, we would go to Sinaloa and visit with my cousins. They are talented musicians, artists, painters, they could do it all.
Mm.
But of course, because you can't make a living at that back then, they became accountants.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So the Mexican dream.
Yeah.
Be a CPA.
And play music on the side.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so we would go to Mexico City during the summers. And my mom took me to every possible museum. And we did all the whole tourist thing in Mexico City. And I learned there to A, you know, understand that, wow, art runs in my family. I could do it as easily as my cousins can do it, even though they're grownups and they're drawing. I could do that. And then also to see all that Mexican culture and realize, you know, wow, there is no blackout on Mexicans over here. Why is that?
Exactly.
And why didn't I not learn in school that, you know, my culture is older than 2,000 years. Mm. It's maybe, you know, 20,000 years old. And how come they don't teach you that in school?
And integral to civilization, like not just to Mexico.
Right, right. I mean, where would we be without tacos right now?
Right? Amen.
The height of civilization.
So is that why you went to school for architecture? And so it was that kind of the accounting part where you were like, okay, I can do that.
Oh, yeah. If you're like the first person in your family to go to college, man, you better go get a career. And I mean, I was it. And, you know, my father had died when I was 13 and it was just me and my mom. And even though I was doing graphic arts and actually making a living in high school and college, doing graphic arts, like printing, working in a print shop.
Yeah.
I just didn't see like that as a way to change society. I saw architecture as a way to change society. And I eventually, when I went to Berkeley, which is where I got my master's in architecture, there I met other Chicanos that wanted to do sketch comedy, wanted to make music, wanted to write comedy. And we, of course, aggregated. And that's when I realized, wow, this is what I was meant to be doing, you know.
Mm. When did you first realize that you had that power, that you could communicate through your cartoons, through, I mean, all the places that you write, actually, because you write in more than just your cartoons. When did you first realize that you had that power?
I think probably the first time that some bully was going to kick my ass in high school. And because I drew him, that's when I kind of realized, like, oh, wait a minute.
So you had drawn him beforehand. He saw it, and then he's like, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
What was the drawing?
I might have made flyers. I might have posted him around. So, because we were kind of all friends, and he was like, I used to hang out with these guys called the Sports Buddies. And they were all the jocks in the school. Yeah. And it was mostly the, you know, we're a minority of Mexicans and blacks in my high school, mostly white high school. So we all kind of clumped together. I was not a jock. I just kind of like hanging out with all the Mexican guys. So I drew this one guy named Ray. And he didn't like the way he drew his head, you know, because we used to call him, I don't know, football head. I forget. You know, we're cruel high school kids. And then he came in and he wanted to kill me. But luckily, my biggest fan was Alvaro Flores, who was a bodybuilder. Oh. That just looked at the big Ray and was like, back off, you know, don't kick this kid's ass. So that's when I realized, like, whoa, what is this? Hmm. What is this weapon?
Yeah, that you have with your pencil.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, you created a really striking cartoon in La Cucaracha. It showed an ICE officer arresting the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
And, you know, it actually made me cry when I was looking at it because it, portrays the ICE officer arresting the Statue of Liberty as, you know, the two main Latino characters are in the car watching, horrified. And I think part of it was just the sadness and the humor that was mixed into that image. And you do that so well in your work. And it just made me wonder, what do you feel when you finish a cartoon?
Yeesh, man. I mean, that's, I feel pretty Mexican because, That's the other thing that I got from my mom, which is learn to cope with your horrible life through laughter. And I think that is like, it's a very Mexican thing. That's a very Latin American thing, but Mexicans are really good at it.
Very good at it. You gave us Cantinflas forever. Yeah. I'm eternally grateful.
Yeah. You're welcome. I did that. But I feel like definitely melancholy, mixed emotions. I'm sad that we're still... You know, I'm now drawing again almost the same cartoons that I was drawing 22, 23 years ago during Prop 187 in California. The first anti-immigrant, big anti-Mexican immigrant law that came out, kind of modern time. And
which said that, you know, Mexicans couldn't ride, was like public transportation. I mean, there were so many things involved in that law.
I used to call it the Mexicans hovering over the sidewalk law, you know, like you can't use any public anything. Everything is welfare, you know, breathing, you know. It's like, geez, now I'm really sad.
I'm so sorry. I mean, you've seen that come full circle in your work because you've been talking about it, like you said, for decades.
Yeah. And it's just the cycle. I mean, I spoke at a school and a young woman said, our comedians failed us. And I thought, no, the politicians failed us. The journalists failed us. The comedians just comment on it.
Yeah. You guys are struggling with it just as much as everyone else is.
Yeah, but if we have to pick up the slack, you know, okay, I'll pick up the slack. But I'm extra screamy on the internet these days. I'm extra chest poundy and everything, you know, and extra loud because apparently the message is not getting through. So
this decades-long career that you've had of really illustrating the world through your humor, I wonder how it's formed you as a human being.
It's made me slightly better at deadlines. I'm not, and I'm also, I guess, you know, getting older and, you know, appreciating other viewpoints. But I know that I have a solid line that cannot be crossed. You know, you can't be racist and justify it, you know, to me. You can't try to convince me that it's okay. You can't be violent, you know, and justify it. And it's tough, you know, trying to be a funny person and trying to be cognizant of your audience at the same time. It's pretty hard. I do cross the line, but I'll say it's that character saying it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And like we have entered the satire dimension, you know, where these characters have come to life.
Yeah.
And it's hard to top them. You know, you just sometimes got to let them just talk. Yeah. Themselves, you know.
And yet, I don't know if I'm reading into this, but in looking at your work through the years, I feel like you are more hopeful. Do you feel that?
Where'd you get that? I don't know.
You seem optimistic to me. Is that just me hoping for that?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like my work is wider. You know, it casts a bigger net. It's not as Chicano-centric as it was before because, you know, you got to, like, evolve. You got to have lots of different topics and, you know, can't keep saying the same thing over and over again.
Well, and you also realize that you know, being Chicano, being Mexican, you're not alone in it either. There are so many people who are part of your community as well.
Yeah, I want to be, you know, I want to be part of the Black community. I want them to be part of my community. I want to be part of the gay community. I want them to be cool with me and accept me for the hetero slob that I am. You know, we're all in the same gang. And we really, really, now more than ever, we got to keep it together, people, because, you know, we need each other like crazy.
Yeah, we do. Thank you so much, Lalo. I really appreciate your voice and your work. It really, I mean, I do find hope in it. I find it to be very hopeful.
All right. You're the one. Great.
I'm the one person who's finding it hopeful. You have that in me. Lalo Alcaraz is a cartoonist and writer best known for creating La Cucaracha, the first nationally syndicated, politically themed Latino daily comic strip. I also loved his writing on the hilarious Border Town, which sadly only had one season on Fox, but thankfully now lives on in streaming. Creating Our Own Lives is produced by Maya Taro, Chris Hegel, and Tranquilis, and is an On Being Studios production. You can listen and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you download podcasts. And leave us a review on iTunes. It matters more than you think. I'm Lily Percy. Thanks for listening.